Hello, friends and neighbors. This is Dave Slusher. This is Sunday, October 24th, 2004. And this is the Evil Genius Chronicles for today, evilgeniuschronicles.org. You can probably notice straight off the bat that my voice sounds a little different. I'm a little ill, a little low energy. I wanted to do this yesterday because I had a lot of stuff to talk about, but I just didn't feel up to doing it. So I've got this kind of, my voice is about half an octave lower than it normally is. If you ever listen to Prairie Home Companion, you know how when he's sick, Garrison Keillor always wants to sing the songs where he's required to have a bass voice. I kind of feel like that. It's like, I've actually got, I sort of like my voice a little better when it's a little deeper. And I've always had, you know, in and around the radio world, as I have been since a young man, I've always had kind of envy for those, you know, the guy, the movie trailer guy. In a world they did not create. I've always kind of, you know, Gary Owen's voice. That's, if I had a Gary Owen's voice, I would have been just delighted. And instead, I've got this wimpy, turdy voice that I have. So I'm going to soldier through, and we'll do this as best we can. Normally, I usually cough at least once in the show, and I always edit it out. Hopefully, we can edit out the worst of the stuff, like that sniffle I just did. But we'll get through it, and I apologize for subjecting you to this. But I didn't want to let this stuff build up anymore, and I'll let you in on a little secret. Although we're podcasting because it's fun and everything's kind of cool, I actually feel a little bit of, and this is internal, no one's putting this pressure on me, I feel a little bit of pressure like to always do one every couple days. Like, I don't want a week to go by without doing one, because I kind of feel like there's so much happening, and the space is kind of filling up, and people, you know, they have me in this pioneering role, which I think is really nice. You know, one of the small handful of people, the first dozen people to be doing this. But I kind of feel like if I don't keep putting stuff out, everyone will forget me, like, really quickly. That it'd be the opposite of this explosion. There'll be an implosion, and then suddenly everyone will forget what's happened because, you know, everything's just happening at hyper speed. So I didn't want to let any more time go without doing one of these. So here we go. Here we're going to roll. I've spent so much time in the last few of these kind of addressing criticisms, either of me or of podcasting, and I'm not going to directly address any of them. I keep saying I'm not going to do it anymore, and then I do it again. Kind of, it shows you where the pebble in my shoe is, you know, where the burr under my saddle is, when I say, oh, I'm going to put this out of my mind and not talk about these sons of bitches anymore, and then I turn right around and do it, and it shows that they're kind of getting to me. So I'm not going to talk about any specific negative criticism. I'm going to talk about the nature of negative criticism, and I'm going to draw on examples from two writers that I know. And those writers are Poppy Z. Bright and Caitlin R. Kiernan. And they're both very similar writers. They're friends with each other. And there's a lot of, you can kind of see it's sort of an axis. You know, they are like-minded in the way they approach writing. They've had similar types careers. Poppy actually preceded Caitlin, helped Caitlin. They lived in the same town for a while. And, you know, they both began in kind of the horror genre and have branched out beyond it, Poppy into like mainstream New Orleans restaurant fiction, which I think is actually way more brilliant than any of her highly popular horror fiction was. And Caitlin is kind of started in kind of the horror idiom, and she's kind of in this, you know, weird fiction, psychological, almost, it's still kind of, she's still more towards the horror, but almost in this kind of H.P. Lovecraft fiction of dread. That's kind of what Caitlin writes. And I like both of these writers. I've interviewed them both multiple times for a Reality Break. I know them both, you know, I would consider them like strong acquaintances. You know, if I see them walking down the street, I would talk to either. You know, if I see it at a convention, I always have pleasant conversations. And Caitlin and her assistant, Jennifer, were nice enough to invite my wife and I to a private party that they were throwing. It was really nice. But both of them have blogs, and I read both of them, you know, every day. I aggregate them. And so both of these women are great writers, good followings. They both, it's kind of the tragedy of modern fiction is that although both of them, you know, they sell, they're popular, they both kind of are on the edge of making ends meet at any given point. And bear in mind, these are successful writers. So just imagine what the not so successful writers go through. And both of them have strong, devoted fan bases. And both of them talk about how, despite when you hear all this great praise for your work, all it takes is one bastard to just really ruin your day. And it's odd in that the negative criticism doesn't have to make sense. And in some ways, the less it makes sense, the more hurtful it is. It doesn't have to be authoritative. It can be some random bastard. It's not like somebody whose opinion matters to you is the one that really sunders you. It's typically the other way. The people whose opinion matter to you, if they say something negative about your work, you kind of take it in context and you see maybe they've got a point. It's like the people that leave the random Amazon feedback, "This is the worst book ever. It sucks." You know, with complete technical inaccuracies and plot descriptions that don't match the book and, you know, just bullshit like that. And those really, really get to them and really bother them. And, you know, I feel for them. I sort of used to not feel for them as much as I do now, because it's weird. I have kind of the same thing going on with this, is I'm getting a lot of feedback lately, and it's almost always positive. In fact, I think every bit of feedback I've ever got directly is positive. And occasionally, you know, I'll see something in Feedster about me, or I'll see a link in, and it's somebody saying, "Man, this is the biggest crock of horseshit I've ever heard." And, you know, that's fair. But what's funny is, if I had to guess, this is just a rough guess, that the positive to negative runs maybe 50-1. Now, bearing in mind there's some self-selection, because people generally don't go out of their way to say, you know, "I think you are a bastard and you suck." Some do, but generally they don't. I have to kind of run across that. So, but still, it's overwhelmingly positive. And the negative criticism always comes from somebody I don't know who they are. Never heard of them, never seen them. So, theoretically, I should be able to just laugh it off. But goddamn, it's hard to do that. And it's just like the random people from nowhere that really kind of suck the energy out of you. And that's the hardest part of this whole thing now, is that I've got in kind of a position, you know, people see this and it's getting a little known. And man, is it hard to just kind of cowboy up, you know, ride through it. Some days the wind is in your face and some days it's at your back. And so I swear to God, there are days that I'll just read some bastard from nowhere. Just make some post. "This guy really sucks." And then I'll sit down to do this, and I'm not thinking of the 40 people who said, "Great job, keep it up." I'm thinking of that one weaselly guy who says, "This sucks." And so a certain amount of what drives me is that, boy, I'll show that guy. Man, will I stick it to him. I'm going to make the greatest show ever. And then he can just shove it up his ass. So I guess in one way that kind of helps the ecology. You know, there's a certain amount of the motivation to like really step it up, and probably more impetus to do that comes from being pissed off and wanting somebody to eat their negative words than from, you know, 1,000 people saying, "Hey, keep it up." You generally, that's great, but that's generally not as motivational. So it's just an observation. But so on the text web blog over the last couple days, I actually addressed a few negative criticisms of the platform of podcasting. I said I was going to talk about it more here, and I'm going to, at least not now. Speaking of feedback, let's play a little bit. This is from Brendan Creasy, who also does the Radio Brendoman audio blog. And take it away, Brendan.
"Hey, Dave. This is Brendan from RadioBrendoman.com. And I just wanted to say that I really dig your show, and I think that's great that you're accepting the audio feedback. I've been wanting to try and do that on my show, but unlike you, I can't get anybody to do it. So I'm just an amateur guy. I mean, I'm a guy that I loved doing radio in college, and I've been wanting to do something like this ever since then, and podcasting has opened that door. And I just put my 5th podcast in the can, and it's a lot of fun." And
in the can. Did you hear that? He betrayed himself of having at least a little bit of radio or audio background. In the can. Here you go. Back to Brendan.
"I mean, I don't even care if I only have 5 listeners, which I think is about what I have. It's just fun to do. And I'm really trying to branch out on the Creative Commons music and trying to use that. And I'm just looking for some more resources on independent music that I don't have to pay a licensing fee for. I know Adam was talking about paying for an ASCAP and a BMI license, but I just don't really feel like paying $500 a year for something that might not even apply to podcasts. I know there's still, that's currently out in the open there, and I was wondering what your thoughts were. I know you've been talking about that a little bit, and you've been promoting some independent music, which is really cool. And I just really like your show, and I just really thank you for what you're doing in podcasting, and it's really cool. And I just keep up the good work, man. Later.
All right. Thank you, Brendan. And RadioBrendoMan.com. And I listened to a few of his episodes this morning, and I liked him. He's a dude, I guess he's from California, but his family's in Missouri. Go Cards. And he's, like, teaching in China. So there's some crazy crazy stories he's got floating through his audio blog. I am far from authoritative on this subject, but as far as finding the music, that's actually been really tough, and I'm having a hard time with that myself. You can do the search at Creative Commons, but that's only for people who have explicitly licensed music with Creative Commons. And here's part of what I'm doing with the approach, and I'll tie in with it. I'll talk about this a little more because I'm going to play a song from one of these bands. So you've got a couple levels of this. One is a Creative Commons that explicitly gives you permission to use it for this, and there are some. Another is somebody who has explicitly given you permission to use their music in your podcast, which means you have to make you have to go to the energy and work of doing that. And I'm actually doing that for some people, which I'll talk about later. And then I'm actually treating anybody, a musician who up on their website is putting their music up for download, kind of like, you know, if it would have been on mp3.com or, you know, they've got it hosted on their website, I'm treating that as implicit permission to use it in this venue. I don't know if that's technically and legally correct, and I'd like some input if anybody has some insight into whether that can be. Now, the ASCAP and BMI stuff, the world of licensing music is so baroque, and it's a lawyer's paradise because you got to accrue some billable hours to ever figure out what the fuck is going on. So it's quite a world, as we're all finding out. It's a world. I got a lot of this out of reading some of the anecdotes from Free Culture. It's a world where these rules, essentially, in a lot of places, serve to prevent the people who are trying to make money from making money, because it's so odd and so abstruse. And so there are places where you would like to... Okay, you want to use... Hell, I don't know. Adam played Black Betty by Ram Jam. You want to license that. How the fuck would you do that? I mean, it would take you days, if not weeks, and a lot of money just to even figure out how to pay them, you know, some pittance to go legally use this music. It's crazy shit. The ASCAP BMI stuff is that goes to the writer of the song, and this is how radio works. They prorate it. In the commercial world, I think you have to log every play. And in the college radio world, which is predominantly where I have worked, you don't do it every single play. I think 1 week a year, you log everything you play for that week, and you extrapolate it out. You just multiply by 52. And that music, that goes to prorate the bucket of licensing money that has accrued, and they kind of pay it out to songwriters. And so songwriters get royalty. From radio play, record companies do not get directly compensated for spinning a record on the radio. Now, they do if you use it in a commercial or a movie or something. And so there's all these weird rules about you got to have the permission of both the songwriter or the rights holder of the song, plus the rights holder of the recording. And it's weird stuff. And so that's another reason to kind of stay away from the commercial world and stay towards... like Steve Gilmore said in one of these things I'm going to play, the people who want to work with you. It's the long tail all over again. Fuck the head. We want the long tail. We want all the people who are kind of under the radar, who are in that long tail that's actually more music than the stuff at the head. And there's a lot in common, I think, between the value we bring to the table and this whole long tail thinking. That article is great. You got to go read it. So we'll get back to that. Now I'm going to play a few bits and pieces. These are both from IT Conversations. I'm going to play from this Future of Online Content, and I'm going to play a serious one and a goofy one. I'll play the goofy one first. Now this is Dan Gilmore talking, and I just want to know, you know, 1,000 people or so listen to these things. But I want to know if anybody else heard this thing that I heard. Now I'm going to play this, and we're going to listen to. It's not Dan Gilmore. There's this weird noise that happens in the background, and it just made me laugh out loud. So we're going to listen to Dan Gilmore, who is brilliant. And I'm not making fun of Dan Gilmore. It's just this weird noise in the background that just tickled the shit out of me.
Folks like people here on this panel developing tools that help me get something a little bit more than just what is interesting on the sort of top level, but help me.
Did you hear that? It sounded halfway between a fart and one of those little cow things when you turn upside down, goes moo. Let's play that again.
Help level, but help me track the conversation.
Actually, when I listen to this, I
help me
it over and over
level, but
I'm trying to figure out
sort of top level, but
help somebody else farting while Dan Gilmore was talking. What the hell was that? It just really tickled me. So I was sitting there giggling as I was listening to this, and I had to stop it because I paid no attention to the next minute and a half of the thing because I was too busy laughing about this weird noise that was in the middle of it. So, Steve Gilmore, did you fart while your brother was talking? What the hell was that? So let me play something from later on, and again, people have left comments on my... Ross Rader left me a comment how he was the person... talking in one of these things where I said I have no idea who's talking. These things, it's so hard to figure out who's talking. You need a vocal Rosetta Stone. You have to go back to the beginning and listen and try to figure out everyone's voices during the introduction and then remember who it is. So the attribution is always tough, and I forget who all's talking here. And I think Jake Ludington is the person asking the question. I forget who's answering besides Steve Gilmore. But let's listen to this and then we'll comment on it.
To get this more back on track of talking about content and the way it relates to blogging in the future.
Thank you.
Some of the bless comments
you.
That...
What's
that,
your name?
Jake Ludington from jakeludington.com. Steve, some of the comments that you've made about the iPod and how that's going to revolutionize media and make sharing of media make more sense does not make sense to me, not because it's the iPod, but because ultimately the reason that people are sharing the popular music and movies that they're sharing is because it's popular stuff. It's not fringe case stuff that only 5 or 10 or 1,000 people want. It's stuff that millions of people want, and they're all getting on there looking for the same thing. And one of the things that I'm finding, because I have a site where I'm actually doing legitimate BitTorrent deliveries, and I'm finding that actually keeping the client or the torrent seated is a real challenge if I don't have a server that's doing it on a dedicated basis, because there's not that many people that are online at any one time seeding the files, and a lot of the people, because of the RIA lawsuits, are keeping their stuff from being reshared. So because I mean, basically the lawsuits are coming from sharing the files, not from downloading the files. And, right. I mean, you could download all you want, and for the most part, nobody is going after you for downloading. It's for when you're resharing the files, and which is making that harder for the BitTorrent adoption as well, because a lot of people are shutting off the upload. Which maybe that slows down their download a little bit, but not enough for anybody to really care. And so for all of that to work, it has to be mass media products that people actually want.
Well, I disagree with you. If you look at the data around power laws at Technorati, you'll see that, I don't want to go there. Let me just say that already we're seeing in the iPod space, just to use that as a quick way of saying, you know, podcasting, whatever, we're already seeing that the popular shows are starting to scale up in terms of the seed problem.
Yeah, but who are the popular shows? The popular shows are the same people that are already the popular bloggers. So what you're doing is you're getting a new media that is confined to a limited number of people.
First of all, one of the ways that laws, that judgments in court have gone against
outstanding, right?
the content.
Okay, we'll stop it there because it diverges from what I want to talk about. First things first, Jake says that it's the popular bloggers who have the popular podcasts. And I don't want to sound immodest and say this is one of the popular ones, but I think he's wrong. I think we're actually creating new popular bloggers from some of these podcasts. And I think that Ye Humble, one that you're listening to right now, would be a counterexample to what he's saying, is that I was a blogger of modest means. And over the last 2 months, I've got, between 5 and 10 times the traffic that I used to. I was in no way a popular blogger, say, beginning of August. And I don't know that I would say that I am one now, but I think that we're seeing actually new distributions being created, new power laws. And people that were off the radar previously are on the radar now because of the podcasting, and not just because the popular people now get popular podcasts. Dave Weiner and Adam Curry, are two examples, but there's a lot of people who have listened to podcasts that nobody heard of before. So I think he's wrong on that. And also this thing he's saying about the only thing people want is the popular stuff, I think is exactly what I was just saying. I think he's wrong on that too. I'm with Brother Gilmore, my soul brother from another mother. Steve Gilmore was, I think, right, is that what Jake Ludington is saying presupposes this kind of gatekeeper, like what you're told to like, through a centralized point structure that we're all about going around. Now that people are turning from the RIAA music and looking for indies and looking for people who are helped by and want to be helped by being played on these podcasts and being shared amongst each other and having their name get out there, we're raising the long tail. And ideally, politically, I'd like to see the tall head go down and the long tail go up, and an equity, a shift in the equilibrium where more of it is in the tail. The side runners, the fact that, I don't know now how many people, 5 or 6. I mean, we're talking tiny numbers, like 6 or 7, 5, 6, 7 people have bought the Side Runners album because I talked about them and played them. I love that. I mean, I don't know how many, I'm sure that's insignificant in the scheme of things. But it shows towards a process that really makes me happy. People do these podcasts, and they talk about what they love, and they spread what they have passion for, and other people find out about it. And that's, to me, that's way different than spreading what's popular because it's popular, because people say that it should be popular. And it's that whole top 40, centralized Clear Channel playlist crap. I miss the days when... Maverick DJ could make a regional hit. Those days are rapidly disappearing. That's how a number of our hits throughout that Ram Jam, I talked about that song earlier, Black Betty, that was a regional hit that spread outward. And so that used to be a very commonplace phenomenon, and now it's like gone, So I disagree with that, and I do agree with him on the fear of lawsuits. And this is one of the things I actually think that the RIAA lawsuits, in my moments where I'm looking for a more Machiavellian motivation, I think those lawsuits are not about preventing people from sharing their music. I think they're about spreading so much FUD and fear that people are scared to share any form of music. And I think this is the RIAA wanting to reestablish themselves as the gatekeepers, which is, don't get music from each other. We're going to sue people into oblivion for sharing music with each other on the pretense that some of it is ours. But really, I think what they want is to not share music that isn't theirs, right? Because that eliminates their role in the world. If you can find out about great music from your friend down the street with the permission of the people who create the music, what do you need the big labels for? What do you need the big media outlets for? What do you need the big chain record store? It's a disintermediated world. And you know what? Some people who are the mediators don't want a disintermediated world. That's their money. And so I've long since now thought that, the point where I got that feeling that that's what it was all about was those freaking Pepsi commercials about the, which were full of lies. At first, when that was lit up the blogosphere saying these anti-RIAA Pepsi iTunes commercials, we thought, yeah, sticking it to the man. Those commercials were all about sucking it off the man, not about sticking it to the man. that whole I fought the law in the background, and I was sued for downloading. Well, nobody was sued for downloading. They were sued for uploading. And so it's all about being scared to download music, which helps if you're in the centralized incumbent position of power, and hurts if you're somebody who wants people to download. And that's just horseshit. But anyway, that's my thoughts on that. The three distinct thoughts all brought up by that couple minutes there. And I'm trying to keep this coherent because, again, the negative comments I hear about this are that I ramble. So you wouldn't believe how much effort I put in trying to kind of keep things focused, because I'm tired of being the guy that rambles. The poster child for scatterbrain rambly audio bloggers. Fuck that. That's not how I want my claim to fame to be, if I even want a claim to fame. So I'll throw this in here. I guess it fits as well as anywhere. One of the concepts that I hope that podcasting will eliminate is this bogus thing, and I hear it all the time. This phrase, fill up an iPod, takes 10,000 songs to fill up an iPod. I think that whole idea, the whole concept is just ridiculous, that an iPod needs to be filled up, that anything, any bit of capacity must be filled up. I see that all the time. It would cost you $10,000 to fill up an iPod. And that was very common. Well, as we've seen right now in the world of podcasting, it could cost you zero to fill up an iPod fairly quickly, as more and more people put stuff online, and it's all free, and you can just take it. So I would like to hear that disappear, because who cares if you've got half your iPod empty? I don't understand what this pressure is to have it full. Who gives a fuck whether it's full or not? Do you have enough stuff to keep you busy? Do you have enough stuff to listen to? Then it's as full as you need it to be. Who cares if you have so much more stuff on there that what you listen to gets listened to half as often? Who cares? This also goes towards what people are talking about. One of the criticisms of podcasting is that there's too much stuff to listen to. And I did write about this yesterday. Who cares? That is an absurd thing to say. That's an absurd criticism. That's a reason why this is not a good platform. There's more anything than you can listen to. There's more music than you can listen to. If I started right now, every CD I owned, and started spinning them, at every minute I have to listen to music, it would take me 2 weeks. And, I'm not that organized and not that dedicated. So I've got more music than I can listen to in any reasonable time period. Who cares? Why does that mean anything? It doesn't. And so what I said is the important variable here is not your percentage completion on, I've downloaded from podcasting 17 hours of music, and I can only listen to 4 a week. If you had 4 hours where you would have been bored shitless, and now because you have that podcasted audio to listen to, you aren't bored shitless, or if you had 4 hours where you would have listened to a radio show that you don't really like, but you listen to because it's on and there's nothing else to do, nothing else to listen to. If that's the case and you free yourself from that, mission accomplished. That's all it's about. That's the important variable, not, oh, I managed to listen to everything I downloaded. Who cares? Who cares if you have a longer queue than you can listen to? Everyone I know with a TiVo dumps shows that they've recorded unwatched because they turn out to have more shows than time to watch them. This is the way these things work. That's the way it's going to go. Big deal. BFD. That's a criticism I dismiss out of hand. Now let me play a little something from Gilmore Gang. And so I've mentioned this, and even Eric Rice has commented on the way I describe how audio people, when they hear about podcasting, have the bing experience where just you can see the little light bulb. You can almost literally see the little cartoon light bulb over their head, the chain that gets pulled and it turns on. On the last Gilmore Gang, they had Adam Curry and Dave Weiner, and then they had 3 of the 4 guys from Firesign Theater. And I had mentioned that for whatever reason, every time I've ever listened to Firesign Theater, I didn't have the gene. I did a comedy show on WRK for several years, and it was reasonably popular at the time. And people would ask me to play Firesign Theater, and I never did because I just never got them, never liked them. But I thought these guys were really smart on the show. And what's funny is you can listen to them get it. I mean, they see the value of it, like, almost immediately. And this is about halfway through the show, and I think this is Phil Proctor. Again, it's impossible to tell, but or not impossible, but it's just so hard to tell. I think this is Phil. But listen to what he has to say about the whole podcasting world.
I have to say one thing, which is that when I talked to you last night, Steve, I went back into the living room, and my 12-year-old is sitting there. I said, "Well, that's interesting. Has anybody here heard anything about podcasting?" And Preston looks up at me as if I'm, you know, like Dad. He says, "Oh yeah, I hear about that all the time on, and it's this. It's a television show that he watches." That every time I walk in, they're talking about their stupid girlfriends and stupid haircuts. So I think it's a really stupid show, you know. But he says, "No, Dad, I'm watching because it's full of information." Well, evidently it was full enough of information so that he, at 12, at least had heard the term podcast.
I think he's talking about the screensavers. I'm not exactly sure about that. But anyway, let's go on.
Casting long before I had. That's one. And two, there is absolutely no reason why in the shows that we are planning on doing at the end of January and early part of February, in addition to webcasting, which we're already setting up, there's absolutely no reason why these shows cannot be and should be podcast. In the first place, it's excellent publicity for us. It spreads out because we're not about the music. We're not an indie band. We're not 20 years old. We're all over 60. That doesn't mean we're out of anybody's mainstream. And
yourself.
Yeah. And as, you know, speaking for myself, I'd like to stay in it, particularly mm-hmm. when it comes to new media. This is something that Judith, my wife, and I have been trying to exploit in our own individual ways as indie producers for years. And of course, the Fire Sign was among the first artists on satellite radio.
That's
from
right.
which we got fired.
Okay, so there you go. But you can hear him get it. He realizes, holy shit, we have a frictionless way to get what we do out to our audiences. And so they're already webcasting, almost no additional cost other than, you know, bandwidth to just capture that and then make it available via podcast. And he can see, you can hear him hit the wheels turning as he's talking. Wow, what's the value of giving this away, which conceivably could translate into a lost sale of an album or something, versus the value of keeping us current, something people talk about, something that's on people's mind, not, hey, I listened to those guys 40 years ago, whatever happened to them, but hey, they're out there. Have you subscribed to the Firesign Theater podcast? Holy shit, listen to these guys, it's great. You can get every show on their tour. Isn't that awesome? And they can see that that has value. Beautiful. You know, something like a month ago, I was spitballing a bunch of ideas as things you could do with podcasting that would be a good idea. And they tend to involve things where I think every one of something would be good to blast out there. Church sermons is one example. Political speeches. There's no reason why, and Barack Obama was the one I thought about because he's somebody that I would actually care about hearing most or all of his speeches. You're going out and you're stumping. Why not have an intern with a laptop taping all these things and then just ripping them to MP3 and pushing them up there? They don't have to be edited. They don't have to be perfect. Sound doesn't have to be awesome, just listenable. And you could subscribe and your followers could stay energized and listen to what you have to say and just, you know, stay up on it and keep the fire lit. Or even, you know, you back off from that and you don't have to do every speech, but just a 5-minute, you know, like the president's weekly radio address. You could do a 5-minute every day. Here's what, you know, where we're going. Here's what we're thinking about. Here's what I stand for as a politician. Who wouldn't want that kind of direct access to the voters? And holy shit, I sort of wish this had kind of happened 6 months ago and then we could be more in place to use it during this election cycle. But I think the next one, this will be highly valuable. And so, you know, bands could do this. Local bands could podcast the entirety of shows. I mean, anybody who has something that they want people to be able to listen to easily. You name it. Just think through. Be creative. Who has this kind of stuff and it might be valuable? they might be giants used to do their song of the day, where you'd call up their answering machine in Brooklyn. And I remember their slogan was, it's free. It was not an 800 number. It was like a local Brooklyn number. You call it up and their slogan was, it's free if you call from work. And they'd have a song a day on their answering machine. They Might Be Giants could podcast their song a day and they would show up on your iPod. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't that be awesome? Anything like that. You think of it, it can be done. And that's why when I hear people saying, oh, these audio bloggers, they suck. That's why podcasting sucks. Man, you ain't got the vision, because you don't have to think about this very hard before you see nothing but wonderful uses that are nothing like anybody's using now. So I'm assembling a list of people who are visionless, knee-jerk-off cocksuckers who cannot figure out something that is not whap them up the side of the head. And it's kind of amazing. So I'm gonna getting harder and harder for me to talk and to breathe, so I'm going to wrap it up here. What I had said before in my prioritization of what do I have the ability to play music-wise on here, that you know, explicit permission is one thing, and also people who give MP3s away on their site. One of the bands I've been wanting to play for a while, and I just haven't got around to asking them for permission, is DQE, a local band, and they're on the Dark Beloved Cloud record label. And I emailed them this morning, but there was not time, you know, to get a response before I did this, asking them for permission to use their music in my podcasts. And I've been a fan of this band for a long time. I love this band. For a long time, it was just a duo, you know, like the White Stripes, the guitar drums style duo. But before then was, you know, Flat Duo Jets and House of Freaks and a lot, Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper. A lot of, they tend to be Southern. I noticed that. The White Stripes are one of the few Northern bands that do this. And I don't know why that is, but I've always thought if you can go up there with one guitarist and one drummer, you got a lot of balls. And I've never seen any of these duo bands like that that didn't just rock the house. Loved DQE for a long time, back when I was, you know, DJ at WREK. And so they have a song I wanted to play, but I have not yet got permission. I'm actually pretty sure that I will get permission eventually. But I'm going to play a different song than the one I was dying to play, because it's one that's available for download on gracebraun.com. GRACEBRAUN.com. So this is the song I'm going to play because she gives it away in MP3 format, and I'm kind of treating that as implicit permission to do the same. From the album I'm Your Girl, which is actually a two-disc set, one of them kind of her solo and one of her as the band DQE, which it's a thin distinction because the same people are on both, but the DQE is more like the typical DQE sound, and then the Grace Braun solo is more kind of like traditional country, traditional folky bluegrass sound. This is from the DQE disc. This is Too Late to Love Me from the album I'm Your Girl.
And now it's too late to love me. Yeah.
There you go. DQE from the album I'm Your Girl. Grace Brown. I think her name's pronounced Brown. I pronounced it Braun for 15 years, and then I saw an interview that said it's pronounced Brown. So, love that band. Check them out. I'll have a link to it on the weblog. EvilGeniusChronicles.org. If you have feedback to send to me, send it to dslusher@gmail.com. If you send audio feedback, I will play it, much like I did in this episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for keeping the faith and bringing about this brave new world. I love it. I will talk to y'all next time. Bye.